British Sky Broadcasting presents Running with Scissors, voiced by Charlotte Strevens on behalf of MCS Agency. Directed by Ryan Murphy, with Annette Bening as Deirdre Burrows, Joseph Cross as Augustine Burrows, Alec Baldwin, Norman Burrows, and Brian Cox as Dr. Finch.
My name is Augustine Burrows. Where do I begin to tell the story of how my mother left me? And then I left my mother. Maybe I should begin with the part about how she'd keep me home from school. That's how close we were. I was so crazy about her.
Oh, hello, Miss Mim. This is Deirdre Burrows calling. Augustine won't be attending school today.
I overconditioned my hair.
He overconditioned his hair.
And the party.
And he has to help me with the dinner party. Thank you.
6-year-old Augustine is putting rollers in his mother's hair.
My mother was crazy about me, too. I've always known that. I guess it doesn't matter where I begin, because nobody's going to believe me anyway.
Fast asleep in bed, his mother shakes his shoulder.
Augustine. 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 Wake up. Wake up. Augustine, wake up. I need you.
Testing. Testing, can you hear me?
With a mouthful of breakfast cereal, Augustine nods. He's the sole audience as his mother stands at a microphone.
Childhood is gone. What remains? Childhood is gone. And youth and ties with people I have loved are broken now.
She drops each page as she reads it.
My grief is more than I can easily contain. My grief builds this town anew and raises all the dead to walk with me this day. What's left? My future seems nefarious, drained of mystery, known in my bones.
The floor at her feet is covered with white A4 paper.
Most of all, what I will miss is the extravagance of my entire future, stretched out before me like a highway in the desert, waves of heat rising up, wrinkling the air. I weep for what is gone, and I weep for myself.
Resplendent in her flowing caftan, she bows her head.
Okay, now I need your honest reaction. Did it feel powerful to you, emotionally charged?
It really does seem like something you'd read in The New Yorker.
You really think so? The New Yorker's very selective. They don't publish just anyone.
I really think they would publish this. That thing with your paralyzed sister, that was great.
Well, we'll see. I just got a rejection letter from the Virginia Quarterly. That worries me. Of course, if the New Yorker did accept this poem, your grandmother would see it. I can't imagine what she would say. But I can't let her reaction keep me from publishing. Augustine, your mother was meant to be a very famous woman.
Deirdre stubs out cigarette after cigarette. Augustine is wrapping pieces of tin foil over the family Labrador's legs and torso. Impatiently, Deirdre looks at her watch.
I have books to sign. I told you to be here at 4. It's 4:30.
I got stuck in traffic.
Bullshit. You're trying to sabotage me.
I should be happy. Augustine picks up the tension. His dad looks worn. In a smart suit with pomandered hair, he goes straight to the bar, puts his briefcase down, and pours himself a drink.
Want to play checkers, Dad?
Not right now, son. My back is out. I've got papers to grade, and I'm very tired, so why don't you go outside and play with the dog for a little while?
But I'm sick of Cream. All she wants to do is sleep. She's an old lady.
Norman ignores him. He's miles away. He lights a cigarette and drags on it heavily. Augustine leaves the room. Norman looks down at the old dog covered with bits of tin foil and tries to fathom it out. The dog stares back at him. Norman wanders into the kitchen with his drink. There's a saucepan bubbling on the stove. He lifts the lid. It's full of boiling water and silver coins. Norman raises his eyes. Augustine is in his bedroom. He stands at the microphone.
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
A spotlight shines on him.
Thank you for coming to my poetry reading tonight. Childhood is gone. What remains? Childhood is gone. And youth.
And ties with people I have loved are broken now.
It segues to Deirdre.
My grief is more than I can easily contain.
Deirdre peers out from the spotlight. A cleaner is doing the hoovering at the back of the library where she's performing her reading. Only one lady sits in the audience. She doesn't look impressed. Deirdre carries on.
What's left? My future seems nefarious, drained of mystery, known in my bones.
Thank you.
Norman sticks his head round the bedroom door and catches Augustine bowing. At the kitchen table, Augustine sits polishing the coins. Norman sits opposite him, watching.
I don't understand.
I polish my allowance. I boil it clean, then polish it with silver polish.
But why, Augustine, why?
Because I like shiny things.
I really don't see myself in you at all.
I'm more like my mom. I want to be special and I want to be famous.
Norman looks at him in despair and sighs. Augustine stands in the doorway watching his mother using the sewing machine.
Are you going to a funeral?
No, sweetie. It's a gown for public appearances. You want to cut?
He cuts a thread.
The plan is I'm announced someplace grand and serious like Carnegie Hall, and I come out in this, and I stand in front of a black velvet curtain. I'm going to demand that in my contract. And that way everything fades away except my writing.
The mail came.
He holds up an envelope from the New Yorker. Slitting it open eagerly and reading it, Deirdre hangs her head and screws the letter up into a ball. She unravels it and rips it. Augustine watches her distress. Deirdre removes her glasses and runs her hand over her face. She can't hide her disappointment. Augustine appears by her side and she hugs him gratefully. Threatened tears beginning to show as she squeezes her eye tightly shut and clings to him for comfort. Teenage Augustine sits hidden behind a cabinet, fiddling with a shiny coin in his shoe, listening to his mother's all-woman poetry group.
And when the sun comes out, the daffodil looks skyward, wet from the rain, but not broken. Triumphant trumpet.
Pleased with herself, the woman smiles, as does everyone else, except Deirdre.
Did you like it, Deirdre? I've been working on it since the last meeting of the poetry club. You said, write what you know. I loved a garden, so I thought I would write about dirt and the sun.
It's shit, Byrne.
Augustine sniggers.
It's sentimental. It's emotionally dishonest. It implodes into nothingness. I was bored. Were you bored, Christy?
Christy looks uncomfortable.
It sort of didn't go anywhere.
You didn't tap into your creative unconscious, Fern.
Fern glances around the room and begins to cry.
Honey.
I'm sorry, Deirdre. I so wanted to have a creative outlet, and I thought maybe this was it, but you're right. It's terrible.
If Anne Sexton writes about flowers, Fern, the poem isn't about the goddamn flowers. The flowers would wilt and rot.
She'd use metaphor to explore her dead marriage, her pain. You understand? Sexton's therapist told her to write poetry as a way to exercise her rage. Now, she's not a housewife. She's a rock and roller. Okay? Last week in Boston, 2,000 people waited in a fucking blizzard to hear her read. That's power recovered. So that's what you need to do, Fern. You need to recover by expressing your anger.
I am angry. Steve takes me for granted.
There it is again. Men.
Sorry.
No, don't you dare apologize, Fern. You funnel that rage into the only escape you have, your art.
Augustin listens intently. Fern is lapping up everything Deirdre says.
Who wants to read next?
No one does. Everyone avoids her gaze.
Christy, you're hiding.
I'm just not quite there.
Get the rage on the page, women.
In the kitchen, Deirdre smacks the drink from Norman's hand.
You infantile tyrant! You'd like nothing more than to see me slit my wrist!
Why don't you just settle down? You know, you are hysterical. You're so goddamn hysterical!
I'm hysterical? You think this is hysterical? You poor bastard! You're so repressed that you mistake creative passion for hysteria, don't you see? This is how you're killing me!
Nobody is trying to kill you, Deirdre. You're doing a perfectly good job of it yourself.
I wish you rotten hell. I regret the day I ever married you.
Can you two stop fighting?
This is between me and your father. Your father's the one.
Well, I live here too, you know.
For us. Look at you. Look at your damn face. You got the face of a man twice your age, 45, going on 90.
Just shut up!
Furiously, Norman runs at her, but Deirdre moves out of the way. He knocks himself out on the kitchen cupboards. Alarmed, Augustin rushes over to him. Deirdre gawps at him.
He's not moving.
Oh, he's just playing another one of his horribly manipulative games. Get up, Norman.
He lies motionless on the floor. Deirdre takes a step towards him.
Get up, Norman. Enough of your pranks.
Augustin supports his dad's head. Norman opens his eyes and groggily touches the side of his head. Deirdre releases her breath with relief. She puts her hand up to her face. She grabs some kitchen roll and hands him a piece. Norman holds the towel up against his head. There's a gash on his temple.
Please don't kill her.
He's not gonna kill me. He'd rather suffocate me with his horribly oppressive manipulation and then wait for me to cut my own throat.
Norman lies there, Augustin kneeling beside him.
Go to bed. Go to bed, Augustin. You've got school in the morning.
I don't want to go to school.
You've got to go, Augustin! You can't keep skipping or I'll get arrested.
Why can't we just be a normal family?
Belligerently, he marches out of the room. That night, a car draws up outside. A pair of feet in pale leather moccasins and razor-sharp creases in his trousers steps out. The stocky figure in a dark wool coat carrying a heavy black briefcase walks up to the double-fronted door. He looks sinister standing under the porch light, his silhouette and Homburg in sharp relief, two decorative urns either side of him. His short white hair is closely cut with a bushy beard and moustache. He wears aviator-style spectacles. He rings the bell and raises his hat politely when the door is opened.
Oh, thank God.
Hello there.
Please come in. It's just been a frantic wreck waiting for you to get here.
It's okay now, Mrs. Burrows.
Oh, no, please. Call me Deirdre.
Where's Norman, Deirdre?
Oh, he's passed out drunk.
I see.
I was afraid for my life tonight. I thought for sure he was going to kill me, that this would finally be the night.
Augustin watches.
Would you like a Sanka?
I'd like some slices of bologna. The side of horseradish.
She registers the odd request, but goes off to get it. Augustin is still watching from the doorway.
Do you mind, son?
Augustin comes in and takes the man's coat.
Don't you worry about your parents, Buckaroo. We'll get this all sorted out. Good luck.
I just pray to God Norman doesn't snap. One of these days he's gonna snap and kill us all.
Enough. That's not the way to talk around your son. You need to comfort him, not frighten him.
That's right. I know. I'm sorry, Augustine. I'm just very upset right now.
Sit down, Deirdre.
The man takes the plate.
Good night, Augustine.
He puts it on the table. Deirdre sits down opposite him.
Now, I'm going to ask you a number of questions, if that's all right with you. They may seem rather personal. In fact, you may not see the relevance, but I believe that's up to me as the doctor to decide. So, your anxiety level, how would you describe it?
He switches on his tape recorder. Deirdre pulls the microphone towards her.
Well, I'm just frantic. I'm very, very upset. I'm very anxious. I feel very emotionally charged. And I feel like I'm at the end of my rope.
Tell me about your bowel movements. Have you noticed any changes, either in regularity or the shape and density of the bowel matter itself?
Is that really... I mean, do we have to...
What I'm getting at is constipation. Both literal and subconscious. Are you constipated in your life, Deirdre? Stuck?
I am stuck.
I understand you write a lot. Are you energetic when you write? Frantic?
Well... when I write, I'm writing from my unconscious. Or I'm trying to.
Do you have sex with your husband?
Yes.
Do you enjoy it?
Deirdre shakes her head and begins to cry, hiding her face with her hand.
Back to your anxiety for a moment. Do you have thoughts of suicide? Deirdre, do you have suicidal thoughts? Do you ever think of killing yourself?
She nods, wiping away a tear.
And how often would you say you have these thoughts of suicide?
She wipes away another.
Right after I have sex with my husband.
Finch puts his biro on the glass table and rummages in his bag. He pulls out a pot of pills and takes one out.
What are those?
Valium. To quiet the nerves.
It's a seminal moment for Deirdre. Finch holds out the pill. In slow motion, she proffers her hand and Finch places it squarely in the middle of her palm. She swallows it without question. Daytime. Deirdre and Norman drive over to see Dr. Finch. The pair of them are smoking. Deirdre is wearing sunglasses. Norman's expression is pinched.
Is he an MD doctor?
Yes, and as I've told you 100 times, he got his MD at Yale.
And you heard about this guy from where?
Dr. Newpal. Augustine's allergist. If you were more of a man and involved in your son's life, you'd know who that was. I smell manure.
I don't smell anything.
I do. I smell manure. It's coming out of your ears.
Fucking bitch.
I'm unhappy.
I'm unhappy.
Norman, if you're so unhappy, why stay in this marriage?
I don't know why. My son.
I don't think that's why you stay, Norman. I think you stay because it's comfortable. It's what you know. You were trapped in your childhood by a castrating mother, and as an adult male, you have sought the same female archetype.
Well, that's just brilliant and very true.
Deirdre, smoking is a great privilege in my sanctuary. But for you, I will allow it.
Thank you.
So, you're saying we should split up?
In order to reach that conclusion, Norman, I need to see both you and Deirdre on a regular and disciplined basis. For 5 hours a day.
I'm available, Dr. Finch.
5 hours a day? I can't do that. I have to work.
See, Dr. Finch, I told you. I'm married to a narcissist.
Norman, if I'm willing to clear my schedule to save your marriage, but you're not, then get out. Leave this office, go home, and start dividing your books and your record albums.
This is bullshit. This is really fucking bullshit.
Finch clicks his biro.
What are you writing?
Norman Burrows is homicidal. He is an unapologetic alcoholic. He is dangerous, a threat to himself, his wife, and his child.
Norman considers. He settles back down in his chair.
Finally, somebody sees.
Another session. Augustine is with Deirdre. Finch hands her a box of tissues.
Deirdre, express yourself. Let it out. Tell Augustine and I why you are crying.
Because I did love Norman once, long ago, but I never should have married him.
So why did you?
He threatened to kill himself if I turned down his proposal. I'm not a murderer. I failed as a wife and a mother.
Yes, you have. But Deirdre, you can't stay with a man who doesn't see your gift. You are a brilliant, brilliant poet. Augustine, have you any questions to ask me concerning the state of your parents' marriage?
I do have one question. What's behind that door?
That? Oh, that leads to an adjacent room. Where I masturbate.
They both express shock.
Dr. Finch.
As evolved as I may indeed be, I am still a human being, Deirdre. A male human being. I am still very much a man. Would you like a tour?
Grinning enthusiastically, Augustine glances at his mother and nods. A young woman dressed in Victorian clothes is curled up on the couch.
What is this, Hope?
Jesus Christ, Dad! You scared the shit out of me!
Hope, you've no business being in here! This is my masturbatorium! And you're using my blanket.
I was just taking a nap.
Nap? This is not the place for naps!
Go mind the telephone. Make fresh coffee. Do your job like a responsible woman.
Smiling broadly at him, she blanks her face and briskly marches out. It's morning. Deirdre's bedside table is laden with Finch's pills. Lying on her side in a drug-induced haze, her eyes are unfocused. Looking very young and vulnerable, Augustine stands in the doorway.
He's leaving.
Now I can focus on my writing.
Deirdre rolls over onto her back and gazes blankly up at the ceiling. Downstairs in the living room, Augustine sits motionless, his arms crossed. Norman comes into the room carrying a suitcase, his overcoat slung over his arm. He puts everything down and takes in Augustine's angry expression. He tries to read him. He slowly walks over to him and, cupping the back of his head, kisses the top of it affectionately. Augustine is rigid. He doesn't even blink. Norman picks up his things and walks out. He doesn't look back. It's a brilliant sunny day. Deirdre drives through a very opulent neighbourhood full of different styled houses. A modern house, a Swiss chalet, a Tudor mansion, a Georgian. They vie with each other. Augustine grins, his face lighting up.
This is nice. Maybe I'll become a doctor.
It's just down here, on the right.
Deirdre indicates and parks. Augustine stands beside the car, frowning deeply.
That's not it. Is it? It can't be.
This is it, Augustine. This is Dr. Finch's house.
Gaping, he can't believe his eyes. A garish pink palace with Grecian columns glares back at him. The front lawn, if you can call it that, looks like a junkyard. The windows appear to be bricked up, and even the front door in the middle doesn't allow any natural light to come through. They walk up the path, and Deirdre rings the bell.
Your doctor lives here.
Shh, shh, shh.
A timid, drab-looking woman opens the door.
Hello, Agnes.
Hello, Deirdre. Come in.
Inside, it's just as bad. An antique shop and a museum rolled into one. Objects everywhere. A marmalade cat on the table is lapping up some leftovers from a crusty dish. Augustine looks down his nose at it, questioning the hygiene.
Oh, Freud. Well, you must be Augustine, isn't that right? Yes, well, I'm Agnes. I'm Dr. Finch's wife. Well, make yourselves at home. I'll go get the doctor.
Agnes sweeps Freud off the table and goes upstairs. Augustine looks alarmed.
I'll wait in the car.
No, no, you will not wait in the car. It'll be hours and it's rude. You just stay here. Get along with the Finch children.
She brushes his collar and fiddles with his tie.
Up here, Deirdre.
In his turn, Augustine removes his mother's sunglasses and flattens an unruly blonde hair. Agnes comes back down the grand staircase. She watches Deirdre's lithe, sexy figure in her fashionable clothes pass her. Self-consciously, Agnes tucks her lank brown hair behind her ears. A Dracula horror film is showing on the television.
Abigail, what are you doing here?
Sitting primly on the sofa with Agnes, Augustine notices her dead expression as she watches the television. A large bag of dog kibble is sitting next to her. She pushes the bag towards him.
Would you like to try some?
No. Thanks.
Why does everybody make such a fuss? Just a little kibble.
Stuff's not clean. It's for dogs.
Well, I guess you're afraid to try new things, Augustine. Sad.
He notices the huge, cheery Christmas tree standing in the corner.
Isn't it a little early for Christmas?
You mean late? It's been up for 2 years.
Dracula bares his fangs, opening his mouth wide. Hearing a rustling noise from the Christmas tree, Augustine gets up to investigate. He peers through the decorated branches covered with baubles. He walks round to the back of it and discovers an engaging blonde toddler squatting on the floor, happily grinning up at him. Stunned, Augustine smiles back.
I just pooped.
Oh, where'd it go, kitty poo?
A trendy blonde teenager breezes in and pinches a cigarette from the tree, which she lights.
Hey. I'm Natalie. The other daughter.
Augustine.
I know. What's with the clothes, choir boy? Are you going to church?
She pulls off his tie.
I just pooped.
John Moses is the kid of one of my dad's patients. We watch him sometimes. Come on. I'm supposed to keep you occupied.
She hooks his collar and pulls him after her. Kneeling on the floor, she drags a heavy piece of equipment out from under the bed.
What is it?
It's an electroshock therapy machine. My dad used to use it on patients all the time. Until the police came. Come on, it'll be a wicked blast. Help me move it.
They drag the square appliance across the carpet. Natalie clips Augustine's tie to her choker.
So, why is Dr. Finch seeing patients in his house now?
Well, you know how President Carter makes us drive 40 miles out of our way to buy gas? Because we're in...
an energy crisis?
Right. Well, that means people don't have extra money for luxuries like mental health. So, he's lost a lot of patients. He's downsizing. Are you ready?
For what?
Are you retarded? To play doctor.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll be the doctor, and you can be the nurse.
I'm not gonna be some cunt-looking nurse. I'll be my father, and you be your mother.
Okay.
Natalie assumes the role.
How are we feeling today, Deirdre?
I'm blocked, Dr. Finch.
I can't tap into my subconscious. I feel I do have a classic in me. I feel I am owed a Pulitzer Prize. Even though I've only published one book, I paid for myself.
Natalie holds up a box of candy and hands Augustin a sweet. Deirdre swallows a real pill.
It's very clear to me now. There's only one treatment available that could resurrect your creative spirit.
Electroshock therapy. We'll start with 1,000 volts.
Natalie places a stiff band around Augustin's forehead. The contact pads dangling from it are stuck onto both his cheeks. She plugs a red and a black lead into the box and picks up the plug.
Is this gonna hurt?
Well, maybe if you pass out, you won't have to go to school.
He nods.
Put in the mouth guard.
He takes the guard from Natalie and fits it snugly into his mouth, biting down on it to keep it in place. He watches with half fascination and half terror as Natalie's hand holding the plug slowly advances towards the socket.
What are you guys doing?
At the last second, he's saved.
He's repressing a memory. We need to go deep into his subconscious mind.
Awesome. But can you do it later? Dad wants to see Augustine in the kitchen.
Hope waltzes off again. Much to Natalie's disappointment, Augustine takes out the mouthguard and pulls off the band and contact pads. He points to his tie. Reluctantly, Natalie gives it back. Reprieved, he smiles at her and goes off to the kitchen. Sitting at the kitchen table, Finch is talking to his mother. She's doped up to the eyeballs. Finch stops when he sees Augustine.
Take a seat, sir.
Gingerly, Augustine approaches the table. It hasn't been cleared for weeks. He pulls out a chair and distastefully removes a dirty casserole pot sitting on it, putting it on the table before he can even sit down.
Augustine, your mother is in a state of crisis.
That's an understatement.
Your mother is in trouble with your father. Your father may want to murder your mother.
Augustine doesn't believe him.
Murder?
Your father is a very, very sick man. Your mother needs to be protected.
Deirdre nods. Augustine looks concerned.
What do we do?
Well, I'm going to take your mother to a motel, and you're going to stay here.
Alarmed, Augustine glances from one to the other. Deirdre doesn't look at him.
But I don't want to stay here.
Finch chuckles, as if Augustine has a choice.
Deirdre, talk to your son. When you're finished, I'll be in the car.
Deirdre's in no fit state to do anything.
Mom, what's going on?
Your father has a lot of anger about how his life turned out. He's projecting it onto me. Dr. Finch is spiritually evolved. We'll be safe with him.
Augustine desperately tries to understand.
Can I come to the motel too? I love those little soaps.
No. The doctor thinks it's best.
For how long?
Not long. A few days, maybe a week.
A week? I can't stay here for a week.
Augustine, don't argue with me. Not now. I'll visit you in my dreams. Did you know I can do that? Once I had a dream I went to Mexico, and when I woke up, there were pesos in my hand.
Horrified, Augustine stares at her. In her drugged state, Deirdre gathers herself together.
I'm going to go now. We'll be okay.
She touches him briefly on the shoulder and leaves. Bereft, Augustine doesn't know what to do. Norman is in a hotel bar somewhere drinking. His hand shakes slightly as he smokes. The bartender brings him the phone.
Telephone call.
Startled, he looks up. He takes the receiver from her.
Hello?
I have an emergency collect call from your son, Augustine.
He slowly replaces the receiver. He presses his handkerchief to his mouth. Augustine is devastated. His father has abandoned him too. He stands there, frozen, the dial tone ringing in his ear. Kneeling in front of the Christmas tree, Augustine is writing furiously.
Dear journal, somebody has to write down what's happening to me. It's not to be believed. So I guess that person is me. Day 7, and still no sign of my mother. This place is worse than any loony bin. I'm not kidding. Every decision in the house is made by something the Finches call...
Bible dipping. It's like asking a magic eight ball a question, only you're asking God. Ask God a question, Augustine.
I don't know.
Oh, for goodness sakes, Augustine, it's not that hard. Should we have fish sticks for dinner?
Awakening. As in, awakening our taste buds. Super. God wants us to have fish sticks.
Shit. The McDonald's is so bad.
Of the daughters, Hope is by far Finch's favorite. I know this because...
Hope, you are by far my favorite daughter.
Sitting at the dinner table, she smiles smugly. Natalie fumes.
Stop antagonizing me, Natalie. Just stop transferring all of your anger onto me. Please make an appointment to see Dad.
You know what? Your avoidance tactics aren't gonna work, Miss Hope. You're the one that hates me, and you're gonna have to confront that.
Is this really our dinner?
Fish sticks and grapes. That's all you get. I am not a maid, and I'm not a chef.
You know, Natalie, you're so oral, you'll never get to anal.
And you're never gonna get a dick in your dried-out cunt, you old maid.
Excellent, Natalie. Your hysteria is spectacular. You're moving from the anal onto the phallic. I'm very proud.
Biting on a grape, Natalie gloats. Augustine looks down at his odd dinner.
Oh, did I mention that Hope is an animal lover? She has a cat named Freud.
Freud is dying.
That speaks to her.
She told me through her purrs, which I can translate.
Hope, Freud wasn't talking to you. Your fucking cat can't talk.
This is animal abuse.
Augustine, be sexier. Make them want you.
She asked me to do this to her. She contacted me during REM sleep and said that she hung on as long as she could. And she wants me to sit with her so she doesn't die alone.
What are you all doing in here? You better not be engaging in pot or other activities.
Shut up, you hag. Leave us alone. So are you going to be carrying around that basket?
Until Freud dies. Which should be the end of the week.
Augustine and Natalie are disco dancing. Hope sits on the floor with Freud trapped under a laundry basket.
According to Hope, Freud died of kitty leukemia. According to me, Freud died of being trapped in a laundry basket for 4 days without food or water.
Augustine, pay your respects.
Everyone is dressed in black. They stand around Freud's grave out in the front garden. Augustine drops a clod of earth into the hole and brushes his palms clean. An estate car draws up. They all swivel round. Augustine spots his mother at the wheel and ecstatically rushes over and gets inside. He grins at her.
Am I coming home for good now?
No, baby. Just a weekend visit.
His face falls. Deirdre drives them away. The Finches stand there watching. It's bright and sunny as Augustine and Natalie make their way towards the cinema. Augustine tweaks Natalie's blonde hair. She smiles and pulls her knitted baker's cap back into place.
You should let me cut your bangs. It'd be really cool.
So is that what you want to be? A hairdresser?
Don't say hairdresser. Say professional, licensed cosmetologist. But what I really want is to own my own hair empire. You know? Like Vidal Sassoon. What? What do you want to be?
She points at a girl clutching some books.
Her. Co-ed, majoring in literature.
You should apply.
They never let me in.
Why not? You're smart.
But I'm a Finch. I'm used goods. Besides, can you imagine the college background check? When they find out what goes on in that house, it'd be like Frankenstein when the villagers surround the castle and then burn it to the fucking ground.
She grabs his arm affectionately, snuggling against him as they walk along.
I'm gay.
Big deal. I know.
She prods his cheek.
My adopted brother Neil's gay, too.
Where does he live?
He used to live out back in the barn. And then he got mad at my dad because he wouldn't give him a real room in the house, so he moved to some boarding house. He rents a single room out there, kind of like a pleated tear. You two should meet. I think you really like each other. Two, please?
She buys the tickets at the booth.
Thanks.
Alina Wertmüller Film Festival is showing. Augustine repeatedly visits the cinema. On this occasion, he comes out with Neil. Neil's intense, with dark hair, strong eyebrows, thick sideburns, and a droopy moustache. He's also much, much older.
That director is fucked up.
I've seen that, like, four times this week already. I love French movies. The first cousins fall in love and then stab each other as the weeping clown appears. I don't really understand the weeping clown part.
He represents the loss of innocence. Want to check out my wheels?
Sure.
Come on. So, do you see your mom at all?
Sometimes. On the weekends.
It's tough to have a sick mom, right? My mom couldn't handle me either. Neither could my dad.
Yeah, mine too. He never wants to see me.
Where does that leave you? With the crazy house, the even crazier Finch.
Do you think he's crazy?
In a good way. I think he's a genius. Like when I was your age and I'd have a rage seizure, he put on music to lower my blood pressure. Nat King Cole, Stardust, revolutionary sort of stuff, you know? Worked every time. If he hadn't adopted me, shit, I don't know what I would have done. Well, here she is.
Wow. But couldn't you have just been his patient? I mean, I don't understand why he had to adopt you.
Yeah, Finch believes that a person becomes an adult at 13. At that age, no adult can tell them what to do. And they can choose their own parents. I did it. Natalie did it.
Natalie? Mm-hmm. Natalie never mentioned that to me.
Oh, really? Ask her about Terrence Maxwell. You're over 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Finch saved my life, that's for sure. He was the first person I told I was gay.
I'm gay, too.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, so that's what this is about. You're gay?
Yeah. I thought Natalie had told you.
Uh-uh. Small world, right? You and me. Crazy. Smoke?
Augustine takes the cigarette.
Here, let me light you.
Neil watches him lasciviously.
Wanna ride home?
Please.
I won't go fast. Maybe.
Half naked, Augustine collapses back on the pillows. Neil joins him. Augustine gazes up at the ceiling in shock.
What just happened?
You think you're gay, right? That's what gay men do. Just wanted you to know what you're in for.
Neil stares at him.
Want a beer?
Smoke?
No.
Answering for him, Neil gets off the bed. Augustine sits up.
Journal, what can I say? He drove a cool car. And it sure beat another crazy dinner at the Finch house. It was a first time for everything, right?
Augustine gazes up at one of the many black and white photographs of young men pinned on the walls.
I took those in New York. They're not very good. I'm not very good at anything. I'm not very good at anything. I'm not very good at anything.
His voice is echo in his head. Abruptly, he turns away. Everything turns skew whiff for a second.
I'm not very good at anything.
What?
Nothing.
Stilling the voices, Neil focuses intently. He turns round and returns to the bed, climbing up behind Augustine and pinching his cigarette. He grabs his shirt and starts buttoning it up over his vest and Y-fronts.
One positive thing has come out of this. Nobody can ever say again that I'm afraid of trying new things.
Come on, get dressed. I have to drive you back to Finch's.
I want to go to my mom's.
Neil draws up outside the house. They sit there awkwardly. Neither looks at the other.
You okay with what happened?
Yeah, sure.
The tension now gone, Neil looks fondly at Augustine. It's not really reciprocated. Augustine goes to get out.
Oh. Thanks for everything.
Neil stops him.
Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Neil has a slightly tortured expression on his face as Augustine gets out. Eagerly, Augustine runs up the path and opens the porch door. Forlornly, Neil drives away. Kneeling in the middle of the floor, Deirdre is kissing Fern. The lighting is soft and some candles have been lit. When Fern sees Augustine's frozen face standing in the doorway, she begins to wail. Reeling, Augustine abruptly walks out. Deirdre doesn't even attempt to run after him. Fern rushes up to him and grabs his lapels.
I'm so sorry.
Augustine pushes her off. He sits on a little wall outside the front door. After a moment, he gets up and marches back inside. Deirdre is calmly having a drink and smoking a cigarette. Angrily, Augustine glares at his mother.
I wish you enjoyed school more. Although I guess it must be very dull compared to your life with me.
Augustine can't speak.
Would you hand me my cover-up? I'm chilly.
He hurls it at her.
Watch it, Augustine! I've got a lit cigarette in my hand. Don't act out in anger. If you're upset by this, talk to me about it.
Disbelief flickers across his face.
How could I not have known?
He sits down.
How long has this been happening?
I've been in love with Fern for a very long time. Our relationship became physical a number of weeks ago. The intimate details are between me and Fern.
Journal, I'm confused. How can my mother be with Fern? Fern drives a Chevy Nova.
I worry about you so. I worry about you in school. The law says you have to go.
Well, fuck that.
Augustine, please don't smoke my cigarettes. You have a pack of your own.
He ignores her.
Although I wish you wouldn't smoke.
Well, I do.
Deirdre makes herself a cup of tea. She joins him at the kitchen table, sitting opposite him. She lights a cigarette.
All my life I've been oppressed, Augustine. And all my life I've worked hard to fight that oppression. When I was a little girl, living in Cairo, Georgia, I had a black nanny named Elsa who lived in a shack on the other side of town. And in those days, black people were called niggers. And I knew that word, nigger, was a dirty word. And I knew it was a word filled with hatred and anger. I knew Elsa was no nigger. I knew it was wrong. It's taken me all my life to claim myself as an artist and to claim myself as a woman. I have struggled against the oppression of my mother and the oppression of your father, and for the first time in my life, I feel I am truly able to claim myself. And so, Augustine, I hope I have your support in my relationship with Fern, because at this stage in my life, I do not need and I will not accept more oppression. I have spent my entire life fighting oppression. I hope I don't have to fight you too.
Can I have $5?
May I have $5? Why?
So I can skip school tomorrow and go to the movies.
Go get my pocketbook. I'll take a look. Do you like my new house? I need high ceilings.
Augustine returns and plonks the bag on the table.
So, you've been spending a lot of time at the Finch's house.
Are there other options I'm not aware of?
Deirdre hands him a note with an envelope at the same time. He takes the note and holds up the envelope.
What is this?
Adoption papers. Dr. Finch has agreed to become your legal guardian.
What?
He takes out the papers and looks at them.
After discussing this with the doctor, we both feel this really is the best option. He and his family can give you the attention you need.
You're giving me away to your shrink?
No. I'm doing what's best for you. What's best for us. I love you very, very much. I will always be your parent, and you will always be my child.
Hurt and angry, he folds them back up, dumps them on the table, and walks out. Deirdre doesn't move. At Neil's, they lie like spoons on the single bed, both shirtless. Augustine is facing away from him.
My fucking father won't even give me money for food. He won't take my calls.
Yeah, he's basically worthless.
Just like my mom.
Just like the fucking nuns who beat me.
God. Sometimes I feel like just taking a butcher knife and just stabbing them both.
I understand.
You're the only one who does.
How close are you to Bookman, Augusta?
Started out as just friends. And now it's more than that.
This is a sexual relationship. Bookman isn't a stable man. His problems run very, very deep.
He seems okay.
Well, I'm not saying you can't see him. After all, as you say, you are already involved, but I just want you to keep me abreast of the situation.
Fine.
Now, would you like some of these?
What are they?
Well, I just got some samples in the mail, so I don't know. So, let me see.
He opens the safe door and chooses a pot of pills.
This is mild anti-anxiety medication, which might help you feel a little calmer.
I'm calm.
When I tell you, you have to go to school.
I go to school.
I'm onto your clever trick, son. I know you stay until homeroom when they do attendance and then you skip out. I know when you've been naughty.
What are you, Santa Claus?
If by that you're asking, am I the great patriarch, the father giver, who fulfills wishes and challenges dreams and brings merriment to those who are suffering? Well then, yes, Augustine, I am Santa Claus.
I'm not going.
You're in junior high, for Christ's sake. It can't be that bad.
I don't fit in.
They sit staring at each other across Finch's desk.
Where would we be without our painful childhoods? Well, the only loophole or way I can see of getting you out of school for any considerable length of time would be for you to commit suicide.
You want me to kill myself?
Well, if you try to kill yourself, I could explain to the school board that you were psychologically unfit to attend and that you needed intensive treatment. It would be a staged suicide attempt. Of course, your poor mother would have to find you and drive you to the hospital where you would stay for 3 weeks or a month for observation.
I don't know. It doesn't...
Augustine, where is your spirit of adventure?
Unconscious on a trolley.
Augustine, stay with us. You're in a hospital.
Oh, God. Get out of your stomach.
Augustine, wake up. Don't you die on me. Wake up. Augustine, wake up. Wake up.
A tube is forced down his throat.
Please stop. Please. I can't.
At the Finches, Augustine sits at the opposite end of the sofa from Agnes. The bag of kibble is plonked in the middle between them. Agnes glances at his ashen face and then returns to the TV. Not looking at him, she grabs a flat box from behind her and plonks it in his lap. He takes it and lifts the lid. The Handbook of Cosmetology stares back at him. Agnes moves the bag of kibble and sits next to him.
The lady at the store said it has illustrations of all the procedures that cosmetology students have to master before they earn their license.
Augustine smiles and looks at the pictures.
Cold waves. Those are really hard.
Well, now you can learn how to do them. It's good to have a dream, Augustine. Dreams get you through the hard times.
Agnes returns to the TV. Augustine stares at her.
What's your dream?
Me. Oh. I was never fancy enough to have one of those. I was always too busy. Working. Well, so the doctor could go to school and hospital. Then the kids came, and raising a family keeps you on the run.
Maybe that was your dream. To have a family.
Yes. That was a dream.
She goes all misty-eyed.
It's a good one to have.
Soaking in the bath, an old-fashioned one on legs, Deirdre makes a call. Poetry covers the walls, written in a heavy black marker.
Fern, it's me.
Why can't we do it?
Get out.
At Neil's.
I miss you. I miss the smell of you.
Where is it?
I'm not interested in what you're selling. Please don't call here again.
Deirdre closes her eyes in pain. At Neil's, Augustin looks at his reflection in the cracked mirror. Suddenly, he sweeps all his belongings and tin foil into a bag. Deirdre pulls out a sheet of paper from the typewriter and rips it up.
Shit! Shit! Oh, shit!
Augustin hacks at a piece of clothing and gives himself a new look, a change of hairstyle and a long, thin scarf. Deirdre tears up her work. The cabinet mirror is also covered with poetry. Deirdre opens the cabinet door. It's stuffed full of pills. At the Finches, Augustin and Natalie are sitting at the kitchen table, opposite one another, morosely playing with their soup. It's like a bomb site. Dirty pots and pans are everywhere. Rain is beating down outside, adding to the miserable atmosphere.
I'm digging this new look. I think you look much better.
Augustin doesn't respond. Natalie takes a cigarette and lights it on the stove. Her long hair drapes over the burner and she singes the edges. She leaps back, grabbing the ends. Mildly interested, Augustin looks up for a second and then returns to his thoughts.
Oh my fucking hair! Oh my God! That was funny. You should be laughing.
Augustin ignores her and carries on playing with his soup. Natalie deliberately blows smoke in his face.
You know what, Augustin? I'm not gonna throw you a pity party. So fucking just get over yourself.
Fuck you, Natalie. You don't know what it's like to be sent away.
You're right, I don't.
And you don't know what it's like to have a boyfriend that's just using you.
Lucky me.
Who's Terrence Maxwell, Natalie?
I've never heard of him.
Tell me who he is. Tell me who he is.
Shut up.
It kills you, doesn't it?
Shut up.
Let it out.
Shut up.
Tell me who he is, Natalie.
Shut up.
Tell me so I don't feel so alone!
He was the only one I ever loved, and he doesn't want me anymore! Do you feel better?
Hitting a nerve, Natalie pulls heavily on her cigarette, trying not to break down any further.
A little bit. How'd you meet him?
Terrence started seeing my dad after his mom died. She left him everything.
She sits down at the table again.
He was 41 when I was 13. He told me I was pretty. And he made me believe it. One day he broke my collarbone. And I had to hitchhike to the emergency room. And I passed out on the side of the road and somebody found me. My dad told him that he would press charges and that he would go to jail. Unless he donated money to my college fund. And he did. $75,000.
That's so great. So if you just apply...
My dad spent it. Every penny. So that the IRS wouldn't take this house. So, I do know what it's like, Augustine. To love somebody who doesn't deserve it. Because they're all you have.
A tear rolls down her cheek.
God, I hate my life.
I hate this kitchen.
Augustine looks up at the ceiling.
I need high ceilings.
Natalie looks up at the ceiling.
Me too.
Let's get rid of it then. Let's take down the ceiling.
They dare each other. Deirdre is sitting in the car outside, drugged up to the eyeballs. Agnes runs over, wrenches open the car door and climbs in. She's soaking wet.
Deirdre, I need to talk to you.
Augustine and Natalie sweep everything off the kitchen table. Augustine pulls back the chairs and climbs up. He gives Natalie a hand. In 4-inch wedges and hot pants and holding a broom, Natalie tests the ceiling with her hand. In the study, Neil hurls his pills at Finch.
I'm a fuck up and it's your fault!
That's right, Neil. Blame your father for your inability to focus. Direct all that rage at me if it makes you feel better.
I can't focus because of the voices! I see you for what you are. Yeah? Camera never lies, see?
He takes a Polaroid.
Yo! My parents have given you thousands of dollars and I'm still sick! You haven't helped me get better! You know what I do! You haven't helped me get better!
The demolition of the kitchen ceiling begins.
Deirdre? Did you hear me?
She's totally out of it.
Hello, Agnes. Why am I here?
Well, you have an appointment. You're regular, 2:00.
Yes. Why are you here?
Because I want you to stop seeing my husband.
The hole in the ceiling gets bigger. Neil continues to hurl things.
You're right, Neil, you're right. I've done nothing, apparently. I've never pulled any strings, got you a scholarship to the University of Rochester to pursue your photographic interests. Absolutely nothing.
You just wanted to get rid of me.
I don't want to get rid of Augustine. He's part of the family. Just you. I just need you to go.
But then I'd miss my therapy. I need Dr. Finch.
No, I need Dr. Finch. I'm not as pretty as you, and I don't have your talent. All I have is this family, and this family doesn't work without him.
Why won't you let me live in that house and be a part of this family?
Because I am the patriarch, and when the patriarch says jump, you jump, goddammit. You don't cooperate, Neil, and for that you're punished. Like the moon
and the sea. Neil glares at him demonically. In the kitchen, Augustine and Natalie are getting covered in plaster dust.
That's not why you won't let me live in this house. You won't let me because you're afraid of me, aren't you? Of what I could do to you in the middle of the night while you're sleeping? You're afraid of my anger, aren't you, Doctor?
Our time is up, Neil. I believe we've made a breakthrough today.
Neil releases his throat and steps back.
Really?
Augustine uses the handle of a tennis racket to enlarge the hole in the ceiling.
I am to see the doctor now.
Deirdre gets out of the car. Agnes looks utterly defeated. Deirdre meets Neil coming out of the study, and the two of them embrace, one lost soul recognizing another.
Hello, Neil.
Hello, Mrs. Burgers. You look wonderful.
Oh, thank you. How's my son?
He's just great.
Will you be kind to him?
I will.
Augustin and Natalie bash away at the ceiling.
That's why I'm blocked, Dr. Finch. I'm sure of it.
You're not blocked because of Fern, Deirdre. You're constipated creatively because of the rage you're not expressing. Scream, Deirdre. Scream. Express the pain.
Taking a deep breath. In the car, Agnes screams. In the garden, Neil clutches his head and screams. Thumping hell out of the kitchen ceiling, Nat and Augustin scream. Deirdre lies on the couch looking up at the ceiling, her brow all furrowed.
Fern has ceased to be a suitable companion, Deirdre. You need someone who worships you, who will feed your talent. I have just the candidate.
They leave the study.
Deirdre, I'd like to introduce you to Dorothy Ambrose, my 3 o'clock. Dorothy is creative like you. She paints her fingernails to match her mood. What color are we today, Dorothy?
Shell pink. I've had a nice day.
Dorothy has a trust fund. It was established by her father after he showed her his penis in a rowboat.
I've always wanted a daughter.
Smiling, Dorothy looks at her with interest. Finch goes into the kitchen and looks questioningly at Augustin and Natalie, who sit defiantly at the table amongst all the debris.
The ceiling was crushing us.
Finch looks up at the hole above them.
So we made a skylight.
He inspects it more thoroughly.
I think it brings a much-needed sense of humour to the kitchen.
His response is not what they were expecting.
Ah!
Vienna sausage. I've been looking for these.
Removing it from the cupboard.
I'll get it. Don't touch my sausage.
He puts the can on the table.
Dr. Finch?
Yes?
Michael Shepherd, IRS.
Finch peers at him over his specs. He and the girls and Augustin stand on the upstairs landing and watch Shepherd leave after his inspection.
Where will I treat the people who need me? How will I provide for my family?
You got an extension, Dad.
6 weeks. After 6 weeks, they take the house.
We'll pray. God will help us.
And when God turns a deaf ear, we can all just live in a car, because at least that's paid for.
Augustin sniggers. Finch goes off into his study.
You are a terrible daughter.
Oh, fuck you, kiss ass.
Hope flounces down the stairs.
Just remember, Daddy's like a great ocean liner. If he goes down, he's taking a lot of people with him.
Augustin and Nat exchange looks. In the kitchen, Augustin is restyling Neil's hair. Neil's uncomfortable and tries to touch it.
Stop. Damn it, Bookman.
What?
Something's not right. It's your hair. It lacks proper body.
That's because you've been pulling at it for 2 hours.
Well, I wouldn't have to pull at it if it wasn't so naturally hideous.
I'm not complaining. I love it. I love everything you touch. Maybe you could work on my mustache.
Neil grabs his hand affectionately.
Oh, this is useless. Natalie, come here. Let me try on you.
He's already restyled her.
No, no. Fuck that. Forget it. I am through being your guinea pig. Look, my hair is coming out fistful.
Stop scratching at it. You look like you have Down syndrome.
Ha, 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 ha,
Hope.
Hope's cooking at the stove. She gives Augustine a filthy look. Little beads dangle from the ends of her closely plaited hair.
Well, look, one of you is going to have to help me, okay? I don't get into beauty school unless I master the cold wave.
Guess you're stuck with me, Jocko.
Augustine returns to Neil's hair.
Being in love is fantastic, Hope. You should try it.
I'd hardly call you an expert.
Neil slams the table hard and everyone jumps.
Are you saying my relationship with Augustine isn't real love?
I'm saying your relationship with Augustine is not mature love. No.
Bullshit!
Neil, if you're not man enough to handle the truth, then maybe you should not be with a child.
I'm not a child, Hope.
You're right, Augustine, you're not. I'm sorry. You're very mature. It's just that I was speaking of the love you have when you're older, mature love.
And what do you, Miss Iceberg, know about mature love? When was the last time you had anything in your twat besides a tampon?
That is the fucking truth.
Natalie doubles up.
All right, Bookman, that's enough. I'm certainly not going to listen to you when you're talking like a teenage boy.
She looks at him pointedly and returns to her stirring. Natalie comes over and looks in the pot.
What's in this? I'm starving.
Oh, this and that. My secret ingredient. Would you like to try?
She holds up a spoonful. Natalie tastes it and looks at Hope's overbright eyes. Natalie becomes suspicious.
What's the secret ingredient?
Freud.
Freud's dead, Hope. You buried her.
I heard her calling me. She wanted me to dig her up. She asked to be reincarnated as a stew.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You fucking lunatic! I knew you were insane!
Natalie storms out.
I don't eat pussy. Psycho. Come on, Augustine, let's go.
I want my beads back, Hope.
They also leave.
I was just kidding, you jerks!
Shouting after them, she returns her attentions back to the pot.
I've got some of my anger out.
Deirdre is holding her poetry group.
Today, we are going to explore sense memory. I'd like everybody to take their blade of grass and stroke their cheeks with their eyes closed. Other senses are heightened when the eyes are closed.
Dorothy strokes Deirdre's cheek. Augustine mucks around with his on Neil.
It's very soothing, isn't it? Oh, all right. Neil, I believe you have a poem you'd like to read today.
Yes.
Deirdre. I'm not sure I feel comfortable with a man in our safe space, I guess, emotionally. I just need time to process this.
Joan, Neil is a beautiful and sensitive poet. He's part of my family, and we are going to welcome him today with open arms and open ears.
Okay, fine. But he's a man.
Joan, what you need to focus on is not the presence of a man in this room, but the lack of your mother's presence in your poetry.
Joan is affronted.
Neil.
Neil takes out a bit of paper from his waistcoat pocket and stands up. He glances uncomfortably at the other women.
The Angry Nun. By Neil Bookman.
Bitch! Whore of Jesus! Dressed in black, you do not bleed like a woman should bleed between the legs. But with your ruler, your crucifix of hatred, you strike my tender flesh. I bleed for you!
Oh, mother. And then I ran out of ink.
Good anger. It ended exactly at the right moment. Augustine, would you make me some iced tea? My new medicine. Makes my throat so dry.
Oh, baby, I'll get it. I got it.
All right, Neil. Let's break it down. Let's break it down for Neil.
Look, I always get my mom something to drink when she works, okay? That's our thing.
Your mother is my thing now. Are we having a stare-down contest?
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you want? Money? Here's $50. Go chase the ice cream truck. Leave!
Glaring at her, Augustine picks up the money.
You think this whole thing is funny, don't you? You look at my mom's craziness as something to entertain you.
You are so mundane. Your mother is an artist. If you want hamburger helper cupcake, you need to find yourself another mother.
In his vest, boxers and dressing gown, Finch runs out onto the landing.
Everyone! Come quickly! Wake up! Wake up! A miracle! A miracle! A miracle has occurred!
Hope, Nat and Augustine come out of their rooms. They all gather around the lavatory and look down into the pan.
What are you looking at?
Dad's morning shit.
See? See how the tip of the coil is breaking out of the surface of the water? Holy Father.
Doctor, let me draw you a nice bath.
Agnes, go get a shoehorn. A shoehorn, Agnes.
Natalie stifles her disbelief.
But what does it mean, Dad?
It means our financial situation is turning round. It means things are looking upward. Literally, the shit is pointing out of the pot towards heaven, to God. My turd is a direct communication from the Holy Father. No, children, no. Laugh. God is. He is the funniest man in the universe.
Agnes returns.
Agnes, I want you to carefully remove this, take it outside and let it dry in the sun. We're starting a shrine, Agnes. A shrine. Hope, let's prepare.
Natalie, Augustine, and Agnes remain absorbed in their own thoughts. Natalie shakes her head.
No, I'll never get into Vassar.
She looks at Augustine. Slowly, her eyes begin to fill. She gets up and walks off. Augustine follows her. Agnes is furiously scouring a pan under the kitchen tap. Augustine comes in. She's been crying and her nose has run. She doesn't turn round.
Agnes?
Somebody's got to stay on top of things in this house. I am just trying to hold it all together.
I need to ask you something.
He's fine. The doctor will be fine. He's just overextended.
It's not what I wanted to ask you.
What do you want, Augustine?
I want you to make me hamburger helper.
She whirls round and the look she gives him is pure, unadulterated love. Augustine's eyes well up. Sitting at the table, she puts a plate of normal food in front of him and pats his shoulder in a motherly fashion.
So there it was at last. The awful truth.
Mr. Blue, I have to go now, darling, don't be angry.
Unlike my mom, I guess I had finally tapped into my subconscious.
She sits and watches him eat, reveling in being able to do just that.
For some reason. So I'll leave you with a smile.
Lying on his stomach, Augustine is scribbling away.
Journal, I feel doomed. I should be getting ready for college. Instead, I'm in my mother's psychiatrist's house, lying on a used twin bed with pee stains on it. How did my life take such a dismal turn? What did I do wrong along the way?
Sitting on the bus, Augustine is deep in thought.
Your head's so low that you can't see the sky.
I turned 15 today. My parents used to make such a big deal out of my birthdays, out of all the holidays. I want it to be like it used to be. When I had a family that tried to love each other. Where nobody thought that God was talking through their shit.
Clutching his journal, he returns home for a visit.
I want a curfew. I want to be grounded for sleeping with a 35-year-old schizophrenic. I want rules and boundaries. Because what I've learned is that without them, all life is a series of surprises. Mr.
Blue, when he walks into the kitchen, you please believe
me. Surprise!
We gotcha!
Deirdre is completely out of it.
Surprise. We gotcha! And you didn't see it coming. No, you didn't.
Smile.
Seeing her in such a dreadful state, Augustine dissolves into tears, which makes Deirdre irritated. Neil stops taking his Polaroids.
Augustine, what's wrong?
He's just overcome, that's all. I'll go get the matches.
Dorothy pulls a face at Augustine. Deirdre picks up one of the birthday candles and begins to eat it. Neil looks down at her and frowns.
This is good.
Augustine cries even harder. Deirdre is in the lounge.
Deirdre? Deirdre, come along now.
I'm not going to any goddamn hospital.
Now, Deirdre, it's just for observation.
This is bullshit!
Dorothy!
I will not be observed!
Deirdre, I've arranged a very, very nice retreat for you in Vermont. But if you don't open the door, we will have to get the police.
No, don't you call the police! Why do you guys want to call the police?
Oh, please!
Don't worry!
Oh, that's right! You think anyone that's not a lesbian is a pig?
You're all pigs!
Oh, you fucking selfish pig!
Filthy, stinking pigs! You just want to hurt him!
You make him cry! He's got his father!
No, you stop! You stop!
Oh, please, why don't you go out right
now? You don't need a police!
The noise in the passage confuses Deirdre. Everything goes quiet in her head. Little white flecks fall in front of her face. She looks up at the ceiling. The flakes are coming from there. Very slowly, Deirdre lifts up her hands and smiles with childish delight.
Blinded by the light.
Outside in the passage, Neil comforts Augustine as Dorothy rants at them. Deirdre captures a snowflake in her outstretched hand. Looking upwards with her arms still raised, Deirdre slowly begins to turn. Her smile deepens as the flakes fall more thickly. Dorothy is still viciously screaming at Neil. Finch finally intervenes and asks Neil to break down the door. He does so by using brute force. Deirdre is spinning round and round, her hands raised, grinning like a Cheshire cat. They stand in the doorway watching Deirdre spin round and round. Augustine holds his head in despair. Deirdre suddenly stops. She looks up at the ceiling and frowns. The snow isn't there anymore. Confused, she looks at them. They advance on her.
Now.
Men in white coats forcibly strap her down and push a mouth guard in. The observation room is full of people in evening dress.
Please let me go! Let me go!
They inject her. Cameras flash. She's transported backstage. She walks from the wings into the packed auditorium, ready for her performance. She holds out her arms, acknowledging the audience, who all stand.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, this is too much. Thank you so much.
The audience sit.
Grief. The angels are gone. For weeks I searched for them and took the precise measurements of each room as if the house had grown smaller in my grief.
Kind of boring, repetitive.
Journal, good news. After only a week of observation, my mother has been released from the loony bin. Dr. Finch assures me she's doing well and is writing a masterpiece that will finally get her on the Merv Griffin show.
Sitting in a restaurant writing, Deirdre spots her ex-husband with another woman.
I wish I had that kind of discipline.
Watch out. That's how he gets you to fall in love with him. Our first date was at the movies. My Fair Lady. I was so nervous, my palms were sweaty. But Norman's hands were so dry. I found out later it was from psoriasis. He reached for my hand in the dark, and that was it. Hello, Norman.
Hello, Deirdre. You look well. I'm sorry, Suzanne, this is my ex-wife, Deirdre. Deirdre, this is my fiancée, Suzanne.
They shake hands.
Hello. It's nice to meet you. I've heard so much about you.
I've heard nothing about you. I open up my mailbox every day hoping to get a child support check from this deadbeat, but all I get is my own voice echoing back at me. You drank our family's money away.
I don't drink anymore, Deirdre. I haven't had a drink in 3 years.
Oh. Excuse me, could you get him a medal? I want my money.
I sent your money to that goddamn Svengali, and his lawyer sent me a paper signed by you giving him power of attorney.
I didn't approve that. Dr. Finch wouldn't do that.
Did I tell you?
What? Did you tell her what? What did he tell you about me, Susie Q? That I was a little housewife with a stupid hobby? Well, that hobby has become quite lucrative, thank you very much. I was just published in Yankee Magazine.
Ma'am, I'm gonna have to
ask
you to quiet down.
What else did he tell you about me? That I was crazy?
Ma'am?
He's the crazy one. And he's a goddamn bastard. He doesn't even see his own son.
He's tried. From what I hear, neither do you, dear John.
Shut up, you cunt!
All right, that's it. Let's go. Come on.
Get your hands off me! I'm leaving here. I need a peaceful environment to do my writing in.
Could you give me a towel, please?
He's covered in water.
Jesus, fuck. Are you wet? Did you get wet?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Returning home one night...
Like a sheep or a dog that can predict an earthquake, I've always been able to sense when my mother is about to go crazy. Her eyes burn electric. Her body gives off a metallic scent. She stops sleeping and starts developing a taste for certain foods, like toothpaste sandwiches. But Journal, I think the worst is over. I really do. Hospitals make you better. My mother is going to get better.
Dorothy's gone. She took everything. I don't want to be alone, so you're moving back in with me.
Augustine sees just one cup and saucer in the now empty display cabinet. He follows his mother into the kitchen.
She's gone?
Just you and me, baby. Come here.
Reaching out, she flaps her hands at him. Reluctantly, Augustine allows himself to be cuddled. He holds himself stiffly. Deirdre clings to him.
Augustine, hug back.
He softens and hugs her back. She kisses him, squeezes him tight, breathing in his smell.
Could you make me some tea, sweetheart?
Sure.
Did I tell you I had a poem accepted by Yankee Magazine?
Really? It's great.
He opens one of the cupboards.
Mom, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm decoupaging my rejection letters on top of the table here.
Why?
Well, I want a daily reminder of my artistic journey when I become famous. This will keep me humble.
Mom, why did you mix your pills with Dorothy's medicine? Dr. Finch says that's what made you sick.
I'd rather not talk about that right now. This whole episode's been very intense for me. But I do believe that may have been my last psychotic episode. I think I finally broke through to my creative unconscious.
Looking for some china, Augustin discovers that all the cupboards are empty.
Did Dorothy take all the cups, too? She's such a bitch.
Oh, no, no, they're out back on the lawn.
His antennae twitching, Augustin goes out the back. Every square inch of lawn, as far as he can see, is covered with china. Every scrap that Deirdre owns has been laid out methodically, row upon row upon row. It's a pretty impressive sight. Augustin leans on the railings, staring at it.
What the fuck have you been up to?
Giving my worldly possessions a moon bath. Anything the doctor's touched, anything he's looked at, needs to be sterilized by the night.
I can't believe I just trusted you.
You have to trust me. I'm your mother. And honestly, Augustin, I worry about you. I disapprove of your choices.
I haven't had a choice.
You did when you wrote this, didn't you?
She produces his journal, which he snatches back.
You read my journal?
Don't try and compete with me, Augustin. If you move back in with me, I won't allow it. You'll only get hurt. When I become a very famous woman, they'll write that I had a son who's a writer too, who doesn't compare to my brilliance. I want more for you than that.
Did you mix your pills again?
Are you judging me? Where are you going? Are you going to call the doctor? That bastard, he took my money. I won't be taken advantage of again. Is that clear? What are you doing in here? Let me in. Are you calling the doctor?
Two policemen stand on the porch.
Good evening, ma'am. We have...
Get off of my property! Don't you dare tell me what to do! Not ever! You understand me?
Ma'am, you need to calm...
Fuck you! I will not be stifled in my own home!
They follow her inside.
Oh, it's Augustin. My mom's gone crazy again, and I need your help.
We need Dad.
Neil's there.
Finch gave her a sedative.
Deirdre's lying in bed.
I like watching her sleep. She looks like she's dead. Like she's finally at peace.
None of us will ever be at peace. Until Finch and every bad seed spawn from Finch is dead.
You sound crazy. Let's go to bed.
Augustin walks off. Neil stands very still. His eyes become manic. In the dead of night, he walks up to Finch's back door. It's locked. He smashes his fist through one of the panes of glass.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time.
He rummages in the cutlery drawer and then looks in another until he finds a pair of scissors.
High up in the sky.
Clutching them in his fist, he walks up the stairs, his shirt tails flapping in the breeze.
Always reminding me that we're apart.
Finch is lying in bed asleep on his back. Neil stands at the foot of the bed watching him, his hand with the scissors raised, ready to strike. He remains quite still, almost frozen as he watches him sleep.
Love is now the stardust.
Neil?
Agnes switches on the light. Neil turns his head to look at her, but doesn't move.
Neil?
Finch doesn't move.
What are you doing, son?
Shut up!
I'm not your son!
What in the hell is going on?
Seeing Natalie and Hope, Neil comes to and registers the scissors in his raised hand.
It's all right.
He looks back at Finch. He lets the scissors drop. His face crumples and he slowly backs away from the bed, wailing like a wounded animal. He leaves the room.
Neil. Neil!
Neil doesn't stop.
Neil!
Finch bows his head in anguish. He's lost him. Hope immediately goes over to him and comforts him. Natalie pats his hair. Agnes makes up the threesome. They gather round him protectively. Next day in the kitchen, Natalie slams the fridge door.
Where did he go?
Away. Why don't we ever have any relish in this house?
What happened?
It's a family situation. It's been handled.
Natalie, you have to tell me, okay? Where did Bookman go?
Natalie gives him a knowing look. In slow motion, Augustin frantically rounds the corner of the bus depot in time to see the back of the bus driving away. He sprints after it, but he's too late. Neil is sitting on the back seat, totally unaware that Augustin is behind him outside. Augustin stands in the middle of the depot, staring at the departing bus. He is distressed beyond words. His mouth hangs open and his eyes fill with tears. He makes a call from a phone box.
Where the fuck are you?
I needed to get away.
My father's very upset with you.
He feels like you're taking your mother's side in this and needs your support
because he wants to have her committed for good to a hospital.
I don't think she needs to be committed.
Agnes thrusts a note at her saying, where is he?
Look, where are you? We'll
come get you.
Okay. Do you have a pen?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me where you are.
I'll tell you where I'll be tomorrow at noon. The bus station. I'm going to New York. You're coming with me. We gotta get away from them, Nat. Your family, my mother. It's the only way that we can have a normal life.
What's going on?
Natalie goes into another room.
What are we going to do in New York, Augustin? Our only skills are restraining psychotics.
Silently, she begins to weep.
Well, all right. And I'll get a job so you can go to school. I'll support us.
I'm afraid, Augustin.
Me too. But we can do this. We have to.
Agnes is trying to hear through the door. Natalie slowly lowers the receiver. In a restaurant, Deirdre is powdering her nose. She sees Augustin come in carrying a suitcase. The lady at the desk points to Deirdre sitting at a table in the corner. Augustin walks up to her. He puts the suitcase down but remains standing. He doesn't smile. Deirdre is unnerved by his hard expression. Eventually, he sits down and she smiles at him. A waitress turns up.
I take your order?
Yes. I'd like a tab and a slice of key lime pie.
Oh, nothing for me. Thanks.
You hungry? You look skinny. You really should eat something.
Don't pull that maternal crap with me now, Mom.
She's hurt.
It's too late for that.
No, it's not too late. We can find a house together where we both can write. We can start over.
I am starting over. In New York.
Right. Really? How are you going to make that work, Augustine? You've no formal education, no money, no furniture, no friends.
Yeah, well, could be worse. Could be going to a prom.
Deirdre is taken aback.
Why did you come here then?
She's close to tears.
Say goodbye to you.
His words hit her. She tries to stem her tears, pretending otherwise. She has to keep on wiping at her cheek. They won't stop. Augustine can barely look. Deirdre desperately tries to keep herself together.
Did you pack enough warm clothes?
Augustine smiles painfully and nods.
Yeah.
He stands up. Without looking at her, he holds her face between his hands and kisses the top of her head goodbye. Deirdre squeezes her eyes tightly shut. He nearly crumbles. Deirdre pats his hand lightly and nods as he releases her. He immediately picks up his suitcase and walks away. He grits his teeth and tries not to cry. Deirdre's expression is unnaturally blank. She gazes out of the window and wipes at her cheek. At the bus station, Augustine is sitting on a bench. A bus draws up in front of him. When the bus drives away, Agnes is sitting next to him. Like two strangers, they sit side by side, not looking at each other.
Natalie's not coming. I told her I'd deal with you.
He glances at her.
Don't try to stop me, Agnes. I'm going.
His chin begins to wobble.
I'm gonna miss you.
He glances at her again and she nods.
I'll miss you too. You're the best son a mom could ever want.
Agnes looks at him pointedly.
You need to know that.
Augustine shakes his head. Agnes opens her bag and produces a long oblong tin, which she gives him. He opens it.
Oh my God. Agnes, there's a lot of money in here.
It's stuffed with notes.
Penny here, dime there.
She smiles.
It adds up. The doctor doesn't know I have it, of course. No one does. You know, this morning, the IRS came again. And I almost gave it to them. And then I thought, no. For once in my life, I'm going to invest wisely. When you write a book, you send me a copy.
He laughs. It turns into a sob. Agnes smooths the back of his hair. and gives him a lingering kiss on the top of his head.
Goodbye, my sweet boy.
She gets up and boards the waiting bus just in front of her.
Agnes!
She turns round.
What are you going to do now?
I don't know. Maybe I'll take down the Christmas tree.
She smiles, and he returns it with a watery one. She disappears into the bus. When it's gone, Augustine is still sitting there. Based on the personal memoirs of Augustine Burroughs.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so
Dr. Finch lost his license to practice medicine after the American Medical Association found him guilty on charges of insurance fraud. He died from heart disease in 2000. Agnes got out of the house and got a job in a nursing home. Natalie graduated from college with a degree in psychology. Hope continued to work for her father until his death. She never married. Norman Burroughs re-established contact with his son and was happily remarried. He died of cirrhosis of the liver in 2005. Deirdre Burroughs lives alone. She continues to write poetry and has been published in a number of small journals. She is estranged from Augustine. Neil Bookman was never seen nor heard from again. Augustine Burroughs moved to New York City. And he wrote a book.
That your elders grew by,
and so the end.
Then with your youth, they see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.